Ponzi schemes, affinity fraud, pump and dump. Investment fraud's very much alive and unfortunately well these days. How do you spot it? How do you avoid it? Joining me this afternoon are financial advisor Chris DeSimeo, Steve Watkins from the Cincinnati Business Courier, and Shannon Himes, who's senior enforcement attorney and outreach director with the Ohio Department of Commerce Division of Securities. And you can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, emailing talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure
to be here.
Hi, Shannon.
Shannon, let's start with you. What is the scope of investment fraud? How big of a problem is this?
Well, it's a huge problem. I can't say that it's necessarily increasing over time, but we're certainly getting more publicity. So these are the scams that we hear on the news every day. These are the scams that cost Ohio investors millions of dollars, that ruined their financial hopes for the future. And so it gets a lot of press, and rightly so, because it's such a horrific, such a horrific effect on retirements and financial futures. So not a good thing to have going on in Ohio or any other state.
Well, Shannon, thanks so much for being with us this afternoon. What are the chances of a typical investor bumping into this kind of thing? I imagine there are a lot of folks who say, well, this could never happen here. It could never happen to me. Bernie Madoff was in New York talking to those people, but it can't happen here. What are the odds of a typical investor running into this kind of thing and having it show up in their backyard personally?
Well, odds are a tough thing to calculate. I will say as a caveat, by and large, the majority of people engage in the sale and purchase of securities every day without any problems. The market is well regulated and it's a pretty safe bet. However, it's those 1%, it's those small percentage of people who do find themselves a victim that we like to focus on, and those are the people that we see here at the division. I will say that for our purposes, we like to tell everybody anyone can be a victim. That's the problem. It's exactly what you said, that people think it couldn't happen to me. And the minute you start thinking of that, you start thinking that way, you become a potential victim. You have to be vigilant and alert.
Shannon, I'm curious about how much investors can expect to get back if they do end up being one of these unfortunate few that do end up losing money. Do you know, I had run across a stat today, at least nationally, one source had mentioned, somebody who follows these things, that typically people can get back probably less than 5%. I don't know what you've found in Ohio, if the odds or percentages are better or worse for investors. Do you have a sense of that?
I have a broad sense of that. First of all, I guess it depends on what type of scam you're dealing with. If you're dealing with a typical Ponzi scheme, which is where there's no legitimate business and money from new investors is being used to pay the proceeds paybacks to the initial investors. In those Ponzi types cases, indeed, there's almost never any money left over. Pennies on the dollar is what investors typically get. So I guess it depends on what sort of thing we're talking about. But yeah, typically with what we see, if investors get money back, it's pennies on the dollar. A lot of that is a function on when the division starts receiving complaints. And unfortunately, sometimes the only heads up that investors get that there's something wrong is when the company goes belly up or the promoter stops taking their calls. So too often, we don't even get the complaint or don't get brought in until the money is already gone, which is a real shame.
Shannon, you were starting to touch on what a Ponzi scheme is. Can you go a little bit more into how that works? And is that the most common type of investment fraud that's out there?
Well, it certainly is. It certainly is a common scheme, and we see variations on the Ponzi time and time again. The Ponzi scheme was named after Charles Ponzi, who perpetrated a pretty popular scheme in the 20s. But the gist of a Ponzi scheme is that it promises to pay return on investment, a certain high percentage of return typically. And investors put in their money and then receive that return back. And they think, this is one 20% or 30% or whatever the high rate is. And so because they got back some money, they reinvest or they get friends to invest, and it spreads by word of mouth. But what the scam is there's no investment. The money they're getting back is not a return on investment. It's just money from new investors being used to pay the people who are leaving. And eventually, like any pyramid sort of thing, it collapses. It gets too big and collapses. And so we see versions of that all over the place, in Ohio and around the country. And it's still a favorite.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned, Shannon, the variations on a Ponzi theme. I thought that sounds like a piece of classical music, actually.
It's not that pleasant, Chris.
Yeah, no. But you're at the Ohio Department of Commerce. You have a whole host of resources available for everyone to use. They're free, of course, and they're very interactive. And you describe the different kinds of links, like how to spot a con artist, rules to live by, certain kinds of fraud aimed typically at older Americans. And then also there's a link to the FINRA's scam meter. Is that one of the – I mean, you could type in different questions, like I heard about this from so-and-so, A, B, C, or D, someone at church, someone at – are those resources being used, and how can people get to those easily?
Well, I think that they are being used. The scam meter, I think, is relatively new, and it is a great interactive tool on FINRA's website. I encourage more people to get on our website, to give us a call. We have tons of resources at our disposal, and our website keeps getting better and better. So I think that there are a lot of publications out there. There are publications that we send to libraries and places like that, but certainly the word should always be spread more. As far as FINRA's scam meter goes, it's a wonderful tool, and what it essentially does is take all the warning signs of fraud that you can find on some of our publications or any of the other states' publications, but puts it into an interactive format so you can say, for example, what type of investment did I purchase? And you click on the, you know, A, B, C, D, or none of the above. And what it does is it helps explain to you these kind of investments are tricky, or anytime you get somebody who sells you an investment and uses a high-pressure sales tactic, that's a warning sign. And so it puts it out there for the consumers in a real interactive way. But I encourage everyone to check out the division's website. It's at www.com.state.oh.us/securities, or you can just search for us on the web. But there are tons of resources on there to help protect you, to help you ask a securities promoter the right questions, to help you find the right stockbroker for you, all sorts of things like that.
And we'd like to hear your stories. If you or someone in your family has ever been the victim of investment fraud, you can tell us your story by calling 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, that number is 513-419-7100. And I'll direct this to everybody. We probably heard this point made so many times, we're tired of it. The old saying, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. That's the best advice. But, you know, sometimes investment fraud, I think it's more complicated than that, that emotions play a role, maybe you're embarrassed to admit you've been taken plays a role, or maybe you just trusted the person and you can't believe they'd take advantage of you.
I noticed that from talking to a lot of investment advisors in the last couple of weeks about how these things happen. And as you pointed out, the idea of too good to be true is definitely sounded like that's the first red flag. And, in hindsight, almost always really shines through pretty brightly. One of these investment advisors mentioned to me that was real interesting, kind of gets to the psychology of this whole thing, is what he called credibility by association, which is if one of your friend says, hey, I've got this great investment advisor, he's done well by me. Maybe other people, you have common friends that have all been in this deal, it's worked for them for a few years. You feel almost like, well, they've probably looked into it. They wouldn't steer me wrong. And these things kind of build. So I don't know if you guys have found that, or Shannon, if that's a common thing, but that sounded like kind of an interesting psychology behind the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, that mob mentality. We call that a variation of that. We call that infinity fraud, where you essentially invest in a scheme, in a business or some sort of investment idea, and you do it mostly because the promoter and everybody else is a member of your group, whether it's a religious group, an ethnic group, a social group, but it lends credibility to a person who otherwise you wouldn't be giving the time of day. And I've talked to many investors in Ohio who are just kicking themselves saying, I knew better, I knew better. I would never have invested in this deal if some stranger had walked up to me on the street and offered it to me. But because it was the guy I golf with, or because it was my friend's buddy from church, I did it. And I didn't check out the investment, and I didn't call anybody, and I didn't talk to my attorney or my tax preparer. I did it all on my own and suffered the consequences, unfortunately.
You know, that was the case in Kentucky years ago, several years ago. A bunch of people from a golf club got taken in, and it just cascaded from there and just kept growing and growing and growing.
Yeah. And, you know, quite often, too, returns are one thing, and there are some investments that offer high returns, but it's because they entail a greater degree of risk.
Absolutely.
And so as an investor, as a friend, if you're giving your friends investment advice, or if you're seeking investment advice, knowing not only what the return is, but the flip side of return, how much volatility is associated with this kind of investment? And if I'm not comfortable, where are the exits? Those are good things to know about before you put some of your hard-earned money in it. And it is amazing how often people don't ask that second question. Okay, if something looks like it's paying a high return, how consistent are those high returns? Because if something's paying 10%, but it's because it's doing 15 one year and 5 the next, well, that kind of fluctuation is not that's not unheard of. But if it's 10% every single year, then that would be at least a legitimate question to ask. Do you get that quite a lot, Shannon, up there?
Absolutely. That's one of the key warning signs of a Ponzi scheme, actually, is consistently high returns. No investment pays consistently high returns. I mean, look at the market. That's not how it behaves. And I know that that was one of the warning signs in the Madoff case as well. He did great when everybody else was losing money. How is that possible? But the whole too good to be true is something that I wish everyone would really pay attention to. And the concept of high returns, high risk. Anytime somebody tells you that it's high returns at no risk or little to no risk, they're not telling you the truth. I'm not going to say it's a scam, but they're not telling you the full risks. There's always a risk to every investment, even if the risk is the company is going to go bankrupt and then can't pay you what they owe you. So, sure, sometimes people do make 30%, but it's only on extremely risky investments. And most of the time, they don't make any money on those high-risk investments.
And we'll continue our conversation about investment fraud after the break. We'd like to hear your comments and questions. 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Continuing the discussion on investment fraud, joining me financial advisor Chris DeSimeo, Steve Watkins with the Cincinnati Business Courier, and Shannon Heim, senior enforcement attorney for the Ohio Department of Commerce, Division of Securities. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Steve, I have a deal for you.
Sure.
I have this low-risk investment. I guarantee you that it will return 10% a year, year after year, no problem. Big red flag, isn't it?
It sure is. It sounds great, but it sounds too good to be true.
You didn't say operators are standing by.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You mentioned that, and I have talked to people who have heard about some of these deals where that is one of the things that happens is people who work for the investment company will say, you're guaranteed to make 7% a year, good market or bad, and the returns probably don't sound outlandish, but the guarantee, like you said, Mark, is a huge red flag.
Yeah. Shannon, that
there
is,
no
isn't
guarantees.
It? That's when you know they're fibbing, right?
And it may just be puffing, but either way, it certainly is a red flag. Some other red flags that we see over and over again, and we urge people to pay attention to, is any sort of high pressure sales techniques being used, either by a third party salesperson, so an investment advisor or something like that, or by the promoter himself. And by that I mean the person who works for the company who's trying to get you to invest in his or her company. So the person who's trying to do a startup and wants you to get in on the ground floor, and he's going to guarantee that you're going to get 25% return after a year and a half, and he's willing to give you a promissory note to that effect. Well, as I like to tell investors, that promissory note is worth the paper it's written on. Sure, you have a cause of action against them if they fail to pay you, but if the business fails, what good does that do you? And so anytime they're not talking to you about the risks, they are not giving you the full scope of information you need in order to make an informed decision about your investment.
Who's the most vulnerable to investment fraud? Is it elderly, young, or is it across the board, or is there one group that's particularly susceptible to this?
Is this for a question for me?
Yes, or Steve, since Steve has covered this extensively. He'll defer to Shannon.
Yeah, Shannon, you could go ahead. I mean, it sounded to me like in some of these cases I've looked into that it does run across the board. And if I had to guess, I would think it probably is more the people who are unfortunately friends with the people who are perpetrating the fraud, I'm guessing.
I know. People who have very few friends don't get ripped off that much, right?
So be a hermit and protect your investments.
Yeah, right. We see probably disproportionately seniors or people who are nearing retirement, but that has, I think, less to do with their vulnerability and more to do with the fact that they have money. People fresh out of college and over their head in debt are not likely to want to put up 20 grand to invest in some new business. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Retirees, people nearing retirement age, they have a lot of money, they have their nest egg ready to go, and so they are often targeted. But everybody's at risk.
Shannon, another thing I'm wondering about, a few people in the investment business had mentioned this to me, is the idea of having separate custodians or a separate custodian from the investment advisor. In other words, the investor's money is held with a different company, and that way there's some checks and balances. I know not every company does that, and the ones that do custody the money with the firm are obviously not all frauds.
No.
But what is it that investors should look for, or is that just one of the things they should ask about and kind of keep in mind if the money is custodied with the advisor?
Right. And a custodian's what, a third party who takes care of the assets?
Holds the money.
Okay.
Right. It's hard to generalize, but anytime you as an investor can have more neutral parties, disinterested third parties, reviewing your investments, looking at your money, it's a good idea. Some of the red flags are where you have one person holding all of the cards. Okay, you've got your financial advisor is also your tax preparer, is also the issuer of the stock that you purchased, and so everything is ultimately running through him. That's a bad sign. There are no checks and balances. We often see that disinterested third parties, and not just in a custodial sense, but letting your attorney look over your investments, letting your daughter or your niece look over your investments, letting your tax preparer or your accountant or somebody look to see what you've got going on, offers fresh eyes and oftentimes stops the fraud early. We've seen that happen in a number of cases here. There was a huge case in Cleveland, huge Ponzi scheme in Cleveland, where the tipster was not any of the investors, but was the nephew of one of the investors, because he looked at his elderly aunt's account and said, "This doesn't look right," and gave us a call.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting also that as people get older, someone's recently widowed, for example, and you know, kids don't call often enough or visit enough, or there are no kids. Sometimes they're kind of lonely. And that, have you found, Shannon, that sometimes can open up the door to vulnerability, that someone, some nice person with this is calling them and they're just happy to be talking to somebody? Is that sometimes one of the things that leads to difficulty in these kinds of cases?
Sure. I mean, like I said, the cult of personality, these frauds are usually driven by the sheer force and magnetism of the con artist who's driving this scheme. So people who would otherwise know better wind up giving all their money to somebody because he's their friend, or he's so nice, or he's looking out for me. And And we see that all the time. Usually, though, I wouldn't say that happens with a cold call kind of situation. It's more likely to happen that this is a person who meets you through church or meets you through the neighborhood or knew you in some sort of business capacity and you already trust them. And then he builds upon that trust and is your best friend ever in order to get you to invest with him.
Shannon, we've talked about the Ponzi schemes and affinity fraud. What are some of the other common scams that people should be aware of and any recent examples in Ohio?
Those are the most common. And like I said, there are variations on it. Con artists usually follow the news. And so they will dress up your basic Charles Ponzi scheme in whatever the new clothes of the day are. So, for example, you know, we see a lot of noise about green energy scams. Well, it's no different than any other scam. It's just calling itself green energy because that's a hot topic right now. But oil and gas scams are always around. They're getting a little more prevalent again because there's more news out there about the oil and gas industry. And there are some issues specific to the oil and gas industry, which you can read more about on our website, but little wrinkles that we don't see for every type of investment. We also have issues with real estate schemes and, you know, buying distressed real estate, fixing it up and selling it. That was more before the market tanked, but those are some common schemes. Lately, we've been seeing a lot with something called a high-yield investment program. These are online investment opportunities that bear all the markers of fraud, really outrageous stuff, you know, 100% returns each month, things like that. I call it a modern version of the old Nigerian letter from the prince scam. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Back in the day?
That's still around, as a matter of fact. Yes.
Well, if you look at some of these high yield investment program websites, they look an awful lot like that. Guaranteed returns, and isn't it great? And you'll never meet a live body to give your money to. You just send them their money electronically. And I think most people who invest in these realize it's a Ponzi, but they hope to get out quick with some money. The problem is that there are people, these online scams, are so much more sophisticated than they used to be a number of years ago. They used to be so easy to spot. It was like a phishing email with all sorts of misspellings and everything else. Now these websites are pretty polished, and they've taken in a lot of good people and a lot of honest investors, and these people don't even live in the country, so it's very, very hard to shut them down. You shut down one website and another one opens up, so we've been seeing a little bit of that as well.
We welcome your questions and comments, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And you're talking about the internet, Shannon. That can be a two-edged sword, I would think, because while the con man can find out about you on the internet, you can also look up information about various investment promoters and what they're up to and the different scams that are out there, can't you?
Oh, absolutely. We encourage people to do that. One of the best tools at our disposal, you can get on our website or you can get on FINRA, which is it's www.finra.org. It's the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. There is something called a broker check, where you can check out any licensee, person who's licensed to sell securities, on that website, or you can call us and we can help walk you through it, or we can do it for you. And you can check out the background of the person that you're looking to do business with. You can see if they have a license. You can see if they've been disciplined. You can get all the details that are relevant. And so that's a wonderful thing to do, and I really encourage Ohioans to look into that.
I could check out Chris DeSimeo, for example.
For some strange reason. You know, it's interesting. You talk about Ponzi, and Ponzi was actually his nickname. We did a show about this many years ago. His real name was Charles Bianchi.
Ah.
And what he did, it was an affinity scam of types,
mm-hmm.
and it was kind of dressed up in something that seemed legitimate. After World War I, there were a lot of Italian Americans who wanted to send money back to the old country, and what he figured out was that there was a spread between an Italian postage stamp and an American postage stamp. So he kind of dressed this up as, look, you're going to invest in this postage, and we're going to buy stamps one place and sell them someplace else and make money on the difference. Mm-hmm. And that was the origin to that. Of course, the name, I'm not sure where the name Ponzi, it was like a nickname for him. Huh. But his real name was Charles Bianchi, B-I-A-N-C-H-I. Why I know that, I don't know. Where are my keys? Nobody knows. But that's the origins of the word Ponzi.
So next time you're playing Trivial Pursuit and that question comes up, you will know the answer to it.
Well, and actually, the legitimate question about that is the fact that these stamps now, of course, in this world of email, the stamps are still used to an extent, but they're collectible. And to what extent is investment fraud, Shannon, built around things that aren't pieces of business, but are themselves made as some kind of like commemorative coins or commemorative stamps, things that are actually made to be sold as collectibles? Is that something that's prevalent quite a bit? And are they regulated differently than securities?
Yeah, it might be prevalent, but because they're not, those aren't going to be deemed securities. So those aren't, we wouldn't really be seeing any of that or keeping tabs on that. So for example, you know, if somebody wants to purchase antiques or gold or something. I mean, gold and precious metals are commodities, and so they're handled differently than securities. They're handled by different agencies. But I will say the hallmarks of fraud remain. The hallmarks of fraud are the same. If it sounds too good to be true, it is. Encourage people to talk to disinterested third parties, to ask as many questions as you have before you part with your money. I mean, bear in mind, at least in the securities business, the burden is on the seller of the securities to give you every scrap of relevant information you need. So I always tell investors, don't be embarrassed. If somebody wants you to invest in their business, you ask them for every bit of financial information they have. You ask to see their bank statements. You ask to see their business plan. You should, if it's legitimate, be getting a bunch of those kind of documents anyway. And if you don't, it's probably a sign of fraud. So, you know, all of those things apply, whether it's a security or, you know, whether you're investing in Beanie Babies like my father-in-law. It's a little late for that. But, you know, anytime you're dealing with that, you want to make sure that you recognize the signs of fraud and that you're doing your best to protect yourself.
Shannon, one other question I had. We talked earlier about how much money or how little investors can expect to get back.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the amount of time that it takes? I'm curious if that process can go on for years. I was looking into some background on the Madoff case not long ago, mm-hmm. and they're still finding assets that are being distributed from time to time to the investors, and that's been 5 years ago almost.
Yeah.
Is that common, or does it usually take a couple of years?
It usually takes a number of years typically. Litigation is slow, as I'm sure you guys are all aware. And finding, you know, the Madoff case was inordinately huge. But even in some of the smaller cases in Ohio where we had a receiver appointed, it can take a number of years before assets are recovered. And some of that, and I think this is going on in the Madoff case as well, some of that is because it's not as simple as taking the money in the account and divvying it up amongst investors. The receiver who's appointed by the court to act in the best interest of the investors, basically, they try to figure out where the deep pockets are, how they can get money back for the investors. So that might mean suing a third party who might bear some responsibility in the fraud. So, you know, litigation takes a while, years.
Mm-hmm. Shannon, sum it up for us. How do you spot the signs of fraud? What's your top advice for that?
Top advice, besides the too good to be true, is ask questions. First stop, I would say, is start off with a division. Find out if the person who's selling you the securities is licensed. Find out if the security itself is registered, and they should be registered with us or the SEC. And find out whether there are any enforcement actions against this guy. He wouldn't believe the number of repeat offenders. So once you ask the questions from us, then ask the questions from the person promoting the security. Ask them where your money's going. Ask them every single thing you can think about. Make sure they give you decent explanations about what they're doing with their money, because that's a sign of fraud. If they give you the brush off, or if they explain something in such a broad way that it doesn't make any sense to you, that's some of the signs. And familiarize yourself with some of the signs of Ponzi schemes and affinity frauds. And just remember that try not to be swayed by the person who's selling you the product. Really try to be as objective as you can when you're making your investment decision.
And finally, if you suspect fraud, what should you do? What's the top thing you should do?
Call the division. Please call us. We love it when we get tips from people who have not been a victim themselves but are calling in a Good Samaritan type role because they received a call from somebody and it sounded suspect, or their aunt received a call from somebody. So please call the division and we can look into it and we can open an investigation if we think that there are people being taken advantage of.
You know, I think educating yourself about investment basics too is a way to protect yourself against fraud.
Absolutely.
If you understand that risk-reward scale, you know the guy who says, hey, I got big returns, little or no risk, he's fibbing to you probably, more than likely, I would say. So, Shannon, Chris, Steve, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Financial advisor Chris DeSimio, Steve Watkins with the Cincinnati Business Courier, and Shannon Himes with the Ohio Department of Commerce Division of Securities. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's program is Pete Reitmeier. The technical director is Bruce Ellis. I'm Mark Haney.